the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. This is Sid Garza Hillman and the Approaching the Natural podcast, my weekly podcast where I discuss all things related to health and happiness, how to live better in the modern world, how to be an unnatural being in a natural world in a more successful way than most of us are able to achieve. For more on that, you can revisit the 110 previous episodes where I have tried to explain what I do here every week in 110 different ways. Essentially, this is about health and happiness, and I am a certified nutritionist. But I really want to stress the happiness aspect of that, that it isn't just for me about health. It's about the whole big picture. And the reason I bring that up is because if you're just joining me, if you're here thinking that I'm going to be talking about food all day or diets or top 10, you know, foods that rhyme with blue, and I don't really know even any that rhyme with blue, that are going to make your skin... I don't know. Look, a lot of promises are made in the marketplace. We're not doing that here. What we are doing is here in this podcast every week, and by we, I mean me, I am trying to help everybody live better. I mean, it's pretty a simple mission for me, okay? I work as a health coach, used to work as a nutritionist, and then nutrition got put in its place, essentially. It was like, okay, nutrition, you're not the boss of me. You're not the end-all, be-all. I don't want to make it all about you. I want to know enough to feed my body well, but then I got other things to deal with in the modern world that are helped by nutrition, but it doesn't solve all my problems. It was a very one-sided conversation. Frankly, the guy that I was talking to, which would be myself, not that interesting to have that long of a conversation. But we worked out our issues. More on that later. Boom. Okay. Anyway, welcome you guys, one and all. If you're just joining me for the first time, I feel sorry for you in a way. I mean, I hope that you're going to understand long enough, stick with me long enough to, you know, for the first 5 minutes of this movie, and then there's just, you know, then I gotcha. I have a sponsor, you guys. Big announcement, huge announcement. First episode, 111 episodes, I have a sponsor. You want to hear who it is? Essentially, it's myself. And here's why. Because the ultra marathon that I am putting on, not alone, I have help, but I'm the guy, whatever, I'm the race director, is officially open for registration. I have already gotten signups. Very exciting. Even one from Canada. I mean, that country, must have internet now. I mean, they are coming along like gangbusters. It's unbelievable. My voice goes high when I talk about it. Anyway, the Mendocino Coast 50K is the name of the race I'm officially announcing, and I've kind of touched on in the last few episodes, I think, not so subtly. MendocinoUltra.com is bringing you this episode of the Approaching the Natural podcast. Sometimes I think I should just slick this out. More on that later. I should just make the show just slick Rick all the time. I don't know why I think that. More on that later. Boom. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Strava, Sid Garza Hillman. Okay. Lot of Strava followers all of a sudden. Gotta love that. I only can think that perhaps it's from my appearance on the No Meat Athlete podcast because he does the athlete thing. And so maybe they're following me, but I'm following them back. I'll tell you that much. It's fun. I dropped my pen. I'm so excited about it. Little touch on Strava, which is a very interesting thing in the realm of the me, not me that I discuss so often on this podcast, the me, not me game. If you're not familiar with that, please go back to other episodes and check that out. It's one of my more effective tools. And anywho, so on Strava, I'm a big, like, these days, and I think it's partly maybe my age, although that doesn't really explain it. It's just like the place of my life or whatever, but I'm running. I do these runs on Strava. You'll see it if you follow me. If you don't, get your butt on there and freaking do it. Jeez. But you'll see like 4 miler by feel or 5 miler by feel. This is a personal thing for me that I've been working with a lot. If you followed me from the beginning or early on, you'll know that I have a little bit of a tendency towards militancy. especially when it comes to things like exercise, training plans, things like that. I have small stepped my way into understanding that while a part of me, it ain't me, and I've done extremely well. But again, it's over the last few years. Okay, it wasn't like 21 days to cure my militancy. 21 days to decreased militancy. Now that would be a book I would buy. Might be a book I'd write. That'd be good. Anything with 21 days in the title, I'll buy it. 21 days. Who can't do anything in 21 days? I don't care if the book even delivers. Doesn't matter. Where was I? I have a little bit of a thing toward militancy. I'll find myself with that urge. Now, how I've succeeded is, in spite of that urge, I've really come a long way with my running, and definitely, interestingly, I am enjoying running more in the last few years than ever before. Just to be clear to anybody listening, I'm not a competitive runner, nor frankly a good runner, but I love it. It's my meditation. It's my thing. Go watch my Why I Love Trail Running video on my YouTube channel. However, I feel the tendency, and this whole running by feel thing is my own thing, where I don't look at my watch. I mean, I specifically don't. I turn my watch on because I post it to Strava and I love that whole community thing, and that's why I dig that. But really, I don't look at it. I don't look at it. I feel the urge to look at it, but I don't look at it. I go by feel. So I'm putting myself in this position where I'm like, I just want to run for the enjoyment. I'm setting the goal. Instead of it being a pace or something, I'm setting it for the enjoyment. Now, again, this isn't all the time. Sometimes I do a more of a formal workout where I'll do like an interval type run. But along the way, I have experimented with this kind of exercise where it is by feel. So sometimes I speed up, and you'll see in my pacing, if you ever look on Strava, a lot of times my last mile just happens to be fairly quick. I'm warmed up, obviously. I'm feeling good. I'm breathing well. These are just sort of things happening. What is coming up, though, and I wanted to mention it here just by way of me being okay with being this transparent, but there's like a certain machismo thing that comes up in my brain. I don't know where it comes from, and I don't act on it, thank God, but there's like a thing where, like, if I'm running this slow, everyone's going to see me running like a 10-minute pace. And I just think it's funny because I'm much better these days of going, not me and moving on. Like, not me. What's my goal here? To enjoy running. My goal isn't to show everybody on Strava that I can run an 8-minute pace, which I could. I actually pull that off and do it. But for what purpose? Unless I'm really training for something, I'm not training for anything right now. So there is literally no purpose other than showing the Strava world that I can hit whatever pace. And it's like, again, are you clear on your priorities? Are you clear on what it is we're trying to do here? We're trying to live well. And if running fast is your goal, then that's fine. It's just not my goal. And so for me to get out of my element to make that my goal when it's really not me, sets me up for failure. It sets me up for, well, I'll put it this way. I could achieve the 8-minute pace or 7-minute pace or whatever if that were my goal, but it's not. And so for me, even when I ran the ultras, it was to finish. I wanted to finish the ultras. I finished the ultras. Okay. I am toying with the idea of signing up for the Way Too Cool 50K, running that again. And I don't know what my goal will be. It definitely will be to finish. I might make a goal to just beat my time from last year by whatever. I'll play with that. It is a lottery, and I don't know if I'm going to get in. So it's neither here nor there. Okay. So anyway, and the other thing I found out is that I think I mentioned this. I don't even remember. It's all a blur. I don't think I can run. No, I know this. I can't run my own race. I can't run Mendocino Coast 50K because I'm the race director. So I'm going to be hanging out as much as I'd love to run it. And here's why. In formulating the trail with my friend of my, with my help of my friend Rick Hemmings, he kind of mapped out the trail. And I have done with my buddy Scott, we've done the last 14 miles. We hiked it. And then I ran the first 9.5 about this past weekend with my running partner, Sid, my buddy Sid. We went out, apparently didn't go the right way, like totally, but we got some of the trail in the middle section. So I've got this sort of last bit to kind of be on. I want to really get to know this trail. But I'm just like running this thing going, it is so freaking beautiful. It's like crazy. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. So to those of you who have signed up, I'm happy that you're in for a treat. I'm just telling you that much. You're freaking in for a treat. Okay? I'm jealous. That's what it is about that. Okay? And actually, Sid, not to just belabor Sid, but it gets me to say my own name. So here's the tricky part. She spells it differently, but you don't know that. She's going to be the sweeper. She volunteered to be the sweeper, which is the last runner. So no matter what, she'll be in last, because that way if somebody has trouble or needs anything, she's going to see every runner no matter what, which is very cool. So that I was very excited about that. Still charged her for the... No, I didn't really. In any case, I wanted to mention just sort of that Strava thing. Like, this stuff comes in it comes up in my brain. I'm going to say your brain too, because I think it's kind of a thing for most people. And I do appreciate two things about that, which is one is that I can recognize the me and not me about it. It's not what I stand for. It's not who I am. It's not even who I've ever been. It's the weird thing. I've never been a competitive runner, so I don't know where the hell that came from. But secondly, I like that I can sort of have a sense of humor about it too. And I think that there's actually a lot in the modern world that we can have a sense of humor about. We don't, but we could. And it's because it's kind of, if we can get to the point where we can, in a way, relax a little bit, get more in touch with ourselves and who we are and what we stand for. One of the many benefits of my small step approach is that you get a sense of humor about that stuff. I'm not going to beat myself up about having the urge to post essentially sacrifice a run so it can be faster so that I can post it on Strava. You know, I mean, that would be it. That'd be the payoff. That's a short-term payoff. It's a fluff. It's fluff. It's a moment of, maybe a moment of pleasure that's fleeting and gone. And then I've just wasted, 50 minutes to an hour and a half or whatever of a run that I could have been enjoying and thinking of other things than how much pain I'm in to try to get the time. Do you see where I'm going with this? Good. I can't stress enough. I'm not making a judgment about people who try to run fast, because that's a goal that gives them pleasure. That's great. But if it's not your goal, then we're in charge. So if your goal is to increase your speed, then you should do that, because that gives you pleasure. I think it's fantastic. Okay, this is just, be clear. My goals will switch in my running if I get into the way too cool 50 and I'm actually in training mode. I'm going to be doing some runs that are going to be structured a little bit more. Right now, I'm digging the free. If I had hair, it'd be dreadlocks during this point in my life. When I'm training for the thing, the hair gets cut. The figurative hair gets cut, a little more militant. Okay, good. Okay. What else? You can go to SidGarzaHillman.com and enter your email address and you get a free chapter of my book, Approaching the Natural Health Manifesto. If you want to help me out and by supporting this podcast, you can donate there on the website. You can also purchase a t-shirt, mug, or WWID, what would I do, bracelet. Okay, you put it on your wrist. It's not about what Sid does. It's about what you do. That's the idea of that bracelet. More on that in other older episodes. Got it? Thank you for a few more donations that came in. You guys are awesome, and I mean it. If you do want to help me out also by supporting the podcast, iTunes reviews, word of mouth, you know the deal, right? Good. Stanford Inn retreats, those are up and running. They're on the stanfordinn.com. There's a running retreat with my buddy Matt Frazier, the No Meat Athlete. Three of those, actually. There's some plant-based cooking intensives and some healthy living retreats with yours truly throughout the year. Go to stanfordinn.com for all your retreat needs. See, I'm trying to infuse a little slickness. Okay, good. Portland Bedfest. Okay, slickness, and then I said Portland Bedfest. Now, I have spoken at the Portland Bedfest, but that's a whole nother world, and I don't even want to go into that. The Portland Vegfest is November 14th and 15th, 2015. I'm heading out there. I went on the line today and saw that I know what I'm talking about now, which is cool. Last week, I was like, I'm slated for two speaking spots, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. Didn't know the subjects, but now I know the subjects. Now, they said, you're going to speak on kidney transplants. And I was like, oh my God, Google, quick. No, I had a list of possibilities on my little speaker sheet. And so they chose a couple of those. So I think I'm fairly equipped, but probably will be doing some note-taking on the airplane ride up there. Anyway, the first one is Living the Example. The second one is Raising Healthy and Happy Kids. I got that one dialed in. I've done that a few times now in New York and et cetera. In April, I'll be in Marshall, Texas. at the old Marshall Health Fest. That's healthfest.com. Good, moving on. So in my training of my ultras earlier this year, I came across a guy named, I'm going to go ahead and mention his name because it's not like confidential, whatever, but his name's Sage Kanade. He's a smoking runner, just superhuman. Superhuman. I mean, that's all I can say. He's incredible. Young guy. And early on, I heard him in an interview and they were talking on the Ultra Runner podcast, which I'll recommend. I'm not connected to them in any way, but it's a good, it's decent podcast, in my opinion. Actually, there's some that I really love and found my coach via that podcast. I just always can't relate to it necessarily because I'm not like technically an ultra runner. So that's my only hesitation. Anywho, so Sage Kanade's on there. He's talking about his diet. And at the time he was doing like, I wish this were an exaggeration, but it's really not. But like calf liver and all like a bunch of oil, like super high fat, high protein, like that kind of bag, right? Very low carbohydrate. The idea of being that, and this is just not at all supported scientifically, but the idea being that, you know, you're so fat adaptive that your body's just super efficient in its way of using fat for energy, which is a more endurance athlete's sort of dream, because you, the more that you use fat to create energy in your body, the less you expend your glycogen stores in your muscles, and the longer you can last out there, blah, blah, blah. By the way, this is all about stress, ultimately, as it always is with me, because the more that you stress your body out by pushing it in, you know, faster than you're relaxingly able to do, your body will tap into those glycogen stores more. And so the more you relax and can breathe and actually literally breathe in a very, you know, rhythmic, good, healthy way, the more, yes, your body will be able to create energy more efficiently. It's essentially what it's being able to do. And you can go longer, makes sense, right? If you're not stressing yourself out and you're losing breath and you're out of breath and you can't breathe, you're going to burn out. You can't continue to do. But if you're running at a pace that is so manageable that you can take deep breaths, you can go longer, you know? So a friend of mine's going to run the 50K, I think. She's training and she said, you know, what should I do? And I said, first thing you do is slow down. And she's a runner. I said, go slower than you ever thought you would even want to do. That's almost ridiculously slow. And that was the thing that I did for my training. And then at that speed, I could go for 20 miles and just get home and play with the kids all day. Like, it was just like, oh, okay, I got it. And slowly my speed started to come back around. But I train my body to be able to handle energy creation and expenditure during that long of a time. In any case, long story short, at the time, I thought, well, this is one of those cases, because I've been doing this a while now, where you hear this a lot. Like, that guy, that girl, she can eat Twinkies and ding-dongs and cheese pizza with butterscotch on it, and they're because they just run triathlons. They just do triathlons all the time, and so they can eat whatever they want. And what I always say when I teach people is they may have a body and a genetic deck of cards that they got dealt, whereby their bodies happen to be efficient more than most in energy creation, and they can turn lots of different kinds of foods into energy that some people like me can't. And they can have performed incredibly well with those types of foods. That doesn't mean those foods are healthy. It just means their bodies are efficient enough to be able to run amazingly well with those foods. But what I always say is nobody defies the laws of biology. And while somebody may have been dealt a better deck of cards, they're going to lose. They're going to break down at some point. They cannot sustain. It's not going to be a long, fruitful life, no pun intended, with that kind of diet that doesn't feed the body the things it needs to perform well, which isn't the calories so much as the things that come with the calories. Vitamins, minerals, you've heard me say this 1,000 times. Phytochemicals, antioxidants, fiber, and water. You need those things because those are the motor oil of the car. Those are the things that help the machine run well so the car can burn its energy without burning out, without breaking down. So I remember at the time, this is a couple years ago now, almost 2 years, where I was watching and saying, okay, this guy's amazing. He's superhuman. But how long? And I remember, I'm not kidding, thinking to myself, I want to see this guy in 10 years. I want to see this guy in 10 years because I want to see that diet, how long he can last. And maybe he's the one that's going to defy the species of man and be the guy who can survive on olive oil and calf liver and just smoke it till he's 99. And I'll be like, you know what? I was wrong. I'll be 148 by that time. But who knows where I'll be. Just watched a video of his on the YouTube. And guess what he's done? Switched over to, guess what, guys? High carbohydrate, low fat. And guess what he's doing? Smoking it. And he just, I saw a video of him running a 20 miler where he just sips some water. No, doesn't even need to take in calories. His body is clicking. It's amazing. And so this has happened to me. And by me, I mean not at all the same way, but kind of. Because in the training for my ultra, when I started it, I had all the gels and the this and the drinks and the blah, blah, blah. I had all this stuff with me all the time and every 20 minutes. But I really did, my body really through that training got very, very efficient and very able to perform under low stress situations where now to this day, I'll go to 8 to 10 miles. I don't even take water. That's an amazing thing. I mean, I used to have the, you know, really, really, for me, it was so stressful that I felt like I needed all that stuff. Now I go out with Sid, we go to 8 mile trail run. I don't take anything, nothing. I'll usually have like a banana on the way and that's it. No carbo, 3 hours before, whatever. And it's adaptation, you guys. If you allow your bodies to adapt, if you give your bodies the time, and I would say your minds too, if you give your whole human body, mind, body, and soul, moments and time to adapt to whatever you're asking it to do, it will. In most cases, it will. I mean, of course, there's limitations, physical and otherwise, but for the most part, the body will try to adapt because evolutionarily, it makes sense for it to adapt because in its adaptation, at the other end of the tunnel of adaptation, it's in a place of less stress. So when you introduce something new to your body says, okay, I've got this new thing. Let me adapt so that this new thing isn't tripping me up as much. On the other end of it, it goes, okay, now I'm used to this. Now it's okay. It doesn't stress me out as much as it did. Any new behavior does that. Again, we are designed to be healthy and happy. When you put your life into that perspective, understand that your adaptation is one of your strongest tools. We human beings do it amazingly well. We adapt incredibly well, but all animals essentially do. When introduced with new things, we will go through the transitional period, which is often uncomfortable, and just because it's new and there's new stuff. And in the physical world, it's muscle memory and your muscles learning this new thing and learning how to ride a bike. It's like this whole thing. Then eventually your body gets it and it does its necessary adjustments to make it something that it knows now and it can do with relatively little stress, certainly less stress than when you began that behavior in the first place. At its core, my entire practice is built on that sort of principle, but where I come at it is crafting tools to enable you to make that transition period as easy as possible. That is where the stress lies. It's in that transition period. The stress lies in the transition period. But we adapt. We do. And it's just a thing that you get used to over time. By small stepping, you don't turn your life upside down and create an inordinate amount of stress on yourself so you can actually understand how effective your adaptive ability is. That's pretty great. Am I right? That's pretty great. I finished this whole thing, which is going, that's cool. Okay. 2 seconds on my dial back day, hashtag. Got a few people doing it. I love that. It's starting to grow. It's like a little, it's like a grassroots. I'm running for president on this thing. Sid Garza-Hillman for president. Hashtag dial back day. And so like one day a week, the country's not going to go to war. Okay. So last week I was like, it can be like a dial back 5 minutes. Here's the thing I want to be clear about. And mostly just parenthetically, and don't remember that I said this. This is essentially about me preserving the hashtag. So just now forget that I said that. Okay, now listen to my advice. Even if you do one little thing one time a week, keep it the dial back day. Look at it as the dial back day. Don't do dial back 5 minutes. It's a too long of a hashtag, frankly, and it just doesn't work on Twitter, and I freaking know Twitter. And don't. And so make it in your brain your dial back day. So my day tends to be Monday, but again, I don't have to have a regular day, but it tends to be, I've said before, because my podcast is today. So I'm on a dial back day today. And I was thinking about this when I was thinking about what I mentioned last week about maybe your dial back day is putting your phone in the other room for 10 minutes. That's your dial back. That's the one thing that you do. Well, what I realized for me is essentially my dial back day is kind of generally one little change, because I most days do fruit all day anyway. It just happens to be easier for me. I throw everything in a blender with water and just drink that during the day. That's how I do most days. But when I come home, I have dinner. So for me, my dial back day is really only replacing dinner. That's all that is. It's actually not that massive of a thing for me, in terms of the way you might see it. Now, in my brain, there's days where it's massive because I'm craving the dinner, et cetera, et cetera. But really, the change isn't that big. I have taken one part of my day and dialed that back a little bit. And again, if you don't know the payoffs by now, they're massive. Massive. Okay? Okay, good. Okay. A few weeks ago, I mentioned an old man by the sea. And actually, he really was an old man by the sea, now that I think about it, because I was running on a trail by the ocean. So the old man by the sea. I was running behind about an 80-year-old man. I mentioned him, and he was running, and it was very, I hate to use the word inspiring, but whatever it was inspiring. I like the word inspire. I don't know why I said that. I enjoy it. It inspires me to even use the darn word. I was running behind him and I was thinking how great, and I think it was in the Rob the Future, Rob the Now episode, of just this kind of like delicate balance of like, we don't want to rob our present, but we don't want to rob our future. And we sort of like do things in the present to ensure or at least up our chances of a good future. But if we put all our eggs in making a good future, we rob ourselves of the present. Okay, that was kind of where I was coming at. But in the context of stress, because I brought that up in this week's episode, it occurred to me that this old man, in context of stress, now this isn't about future and past essentially, or really, but here's what I think. I think he pushed just hard enough in terms of adaptive stress, keeping his body moving, maybe the way he ate, I don't know. But he pushed just hard enough so he could run at 80, but not too hard so that he couldn't run at 80. I mean, I see this man at 80 years old and, I love running. So, of course, I totally related to him, but it doesn't really mean running per se. I could see an 80-year-old man dancing or riding a unicycle. I would love to be able to do that at 80. I mean, in my brain, I'm thinking, this is if I can go run on a trail at 80, something I've done is right. You know what I mean? So there's that balance of stress of learning how to figuring out for yourself the level of stress on any given day that is getting you in that pocket where you're adapting and you're growing and you're learning and you're achieving a life that is more on your terms day to day, let's say. And you're never, for long periods of time anyway, going over that point where it's debilitating and you're just kind of going through life at that nice speed. And if he was too stagnant, not moving enough, that's the other side of the coin, right? So then he's creating that stagnancy stress. Chances are he also wouldn't be running at 80. So, he somehow, I don't know. I wish I could find him again. I would love to sit down with him and go, what did you do or not do in your life such that you're able to go for a jog on trails at 80 years old? I think it's just the cool. I just think it's amazing. And again, it ain't about the running. It's just that he's active at 80. I mean, it's the coolest thing. I went by him and said hi, and he goes, "Hey, how you doing? You look great. You're doing great." Like, just this like great old man. God, it's the coolest thing. I mean, the coolest thing. Mushroom coffee to that guy, huh? Hmm. Speaking of stumbling, wow, that was tip of the hat to me for that segue. The subject of this week's episode, and I know that I got through the beginning stuff a little early because I got a bunch of stuff to talk about on this one. And I don't really, the subject line, the subject title, the episode title, Stumble. I have and always will revisit and visit the concept of failure. I always will. But I'll explain why in a minute. I wanted to talk about success before I talk about failure a little bit. And what I was thinking about this week was that most people, I would say, not scientific, anecdotal, most people don't consider something like a happy family part of success, at least not part of success in the way that the media portrays success, or the way that, I'll just say media, I mean society in general, the sort of conventional wisdom of success has to do a lot with, you know, the best job or money or some sort of material thing or fame. That's a big one too. And a lot of times, you know, I would say with this, but rarely do we look at somebody super successful and say, yeah, but how's their family life? Like, how are their friendships? How's Taylor Swift? I don't want to knock Taylor. I love Taylor Swift. Love her. So she's fantastic. And she can't do anything wrong. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, hypothetically, that Taylor Swift, you know, we wonder, what's her family like? I don't think that people look at family success and say that's part of success. Or put it this way, we don't look at somebody hugely successful in their field and say, well, yes, they've sold 3 billion records, but their family life isn't that good. They don't get along with their parents. And she may. I'm not saying that. I'm not knocking Taylor. I cannot be clear enough about that. But I think you get what I'm saying. When considering all aspects of life, when you consider, and if you take into consideration the picture of success, and when you take into consideration all the aspects of life as maybe being part of that picture of success, I think there's way more successful people in the world than we think. I think that there's way more. In fact, I mean, I remember being an actor full-time in Los Angeles and achieving just a very minimal amount of success, let's face it. But if you look at the context of my whole life, I was very successful. So in my own brain, but we lose out to that. We don't think about that. And because we don't think about that, this is the most amazing thing, we're less happy because we don't consider those things. I had a happy marriage. I had a child for at least part of my acting career. I had a band. I was playing music. I was touring. I was putting out records. But there was frustration for me even then, not a lot because music really was where my brain was, but more on music in a second. But there was the thing of like, oh, I'm not that successful as an actor. I should be more successful, or why can't I be more successful, this kind of thing. And I was like, looking back now, I was like, I was hugely successful, just not in the acting, you know, only acting world. The analogy for me, of course, is like when I talk about restriction. You know, I gave up dairy in 1992 and cured myself of asthma. And I said this before, but, you know, somebody looking at my diet would say that's very restrictive. You don't eat cheese, milk, and yogurt anymore. And in the food realm, it is restrictive. But I call it making the trade. In the context of my entire life, it wasn't restrictive at all. I traded that for not having asthma. That's a huge win for me, and why I've never gone back to dairy, because there's nothing worth it for me. I adapted very well to it not being in my life. And that's, I'm not even talking about physically. So I just wanted to point that out, that the word success, and therefore the word failure, we have very limited and very narrow definitions of those things. And those things are only as we perceive them in the world. What's interesting is that because of the world and the way that we sell the ideas, the way that we do in magazines and movies and TV and everything else, we don't notice how actually successful we are. The world, and by the world, I mean all of us in it, but, you know, magazines sell. They don't say like this, they don't put somebody on the cover who is like making a living as an actor. They wouldn't have put me on a cover of People magazine. Sid did an American Express commercial, but he's got a really happy marriage and a kid he loves, and it's a great family life, and he has an indie rock band. That's like so not interesting because I don't have a mansion and I don't have a ton of money and I don't have all the things that we equate with success. And that's a disappointment for me, because not that I want to be on a magazine cover, I get that. But the problem is those people on the magazine cover show the world supposedly what success is. And that's what we measure that by. That's a travesty, because all of us are, most of us are successful in many ways. And so, but we don't see that. We go, well, I don't have enough money. I don't make enough money. I'm not successful yet. Well, you're freaking crazy. For me to be really successful in acting probably would have meant me giving up the other things that I was really and still am really good at. Family, parenting, music, things that I love, had passion for. I would have given those things up to get that other thing, to be supposedly more successful. What's the point of all this? The point of all this is that conceptually we tend to get it. We'll say, money doesn't buy you happiness. We'll say, you know, we understand conceptually fame is empty. We'll say it. But sometimes I think, and I'm definitely in this camp, there were times in my past, and still creeps up now, where deep down, like I get that, so get it conceptually. And this is definitely the me, not me game partly too, but I'll think like the draw of, you know, greater success, great, let's say book set, you know, my book did fine. It's doing fine. But certainly not a bestseller, not even close. And I think, God, what if my book were a bestseller? What if I was selling thousands and thousands of copies and I had all this money coming in and I wasn't struggling financially? Wouldn't that be, you know, I don't know what that would be. I don't know. Because the things in place now that dictate my level of happiness, which is really good right now, there would be a shift in the balance of all those things if that one little thing were to swing pretty wide. Right now, I've got everything kind of in a good balance. It's struggle. And the reason why I titled this week's episode Stumble is because there's constant stumbling. I'm wading my way through this just like everybody else is. We don't know the answers. Nobody knows the answers. You get sold the answers because somebody's selling you something. They don't know the answers. We don't know all the answers. We don't. We don't know how to be happy necessarily. We don't. We try things and we grow and we adapt and we learn and we get happier and happier. But there's no magic bullet. If there were, you know, we would know what that is. We try to make their magic bullet. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing with every diet pill and, you know, drug out there, is to find that magic bullet, the thing that has no side effects. I mean, that's our thing, right? The thing that makes you healthy and happy with no side effects. There's side effects to that. Why? Because it's not real. Not real. So you're cheating your way, and when you cheat, you lose. Every time. So, deep down on some level, we maybe wish we had the fame and the money, while at the same time, we understand that neither of those things buys you happiness. Certainly not health. And it's that weird dichotomy next to each other. Those things of like, I get that it doesn't buy you happiness, but maybe if I had it, I would be happy. Maybe if I had fame and a ton of money, I would do things differently than virtually 99.9% of people who have that stuff. And the people who are doing maybe things that do make them happy probably aren't fame. They're probably not into fame so much, and they're probably not trying to be famous, and they're probably doing things in a more quiet way. I'm just guessing. Okay? All right. So now I want to talk about my music a little bit. And I was remarking the other day how incredibly well music prepared me, unknowingly at the time, by the way, for the career that I have now. And two seemingly unrelated fields, and there's certainly just like the creativity of it, for sure. But what I realize is that in launching the way that I work with clients, which is unique, and my style is what it is. It's me. But I don't want to brush that over because it's me. And I learned that musically. I learned that when I had my band. I had many, many struggles early on as a young guy, kind of just forging his way creatively and artistically in the world, and definitely being, you know, sucked in by the ideas of fame and what it is to be successful as a musician, and, you know, being in that weird place all that time, place of insecurity. When you put yourself out into the world, you put yourself it's a very insecure place. It's a very insecure place. And what I realized early on, and I don't know why I did this, but man, is it a blessing as I look back. I had two options. And I remember having a conversation with a guy I was in a band with in college about this. I was in college, 20 years old, had this exact conversation. I was already sort of thinking about this, like, well, wait, we can go one of two ways here. One way could have been me just putting my eggs into the, I got to write a hit. So I could try to write a hit song. I could say, okay, I'm going to write with the intention, not like writing a song that happens to be a hit, but like with the intention of, I'm going to write a hit song. And here's what a hit song is. You're going to do this and this from this many beats per minute and this long 3 minutes and blah, blah, blah. Formula, right? Number two, I could write songs that were me. I could learn more. And listen, I put a record out when I was like 24, I don't know, just my own name. You can't find it anywhere. Thank God. Like, it's gone. It's in people's houses probably. I listen to that record. There's parts of it that are okay, parts of it that kind of make me cringe, like it's like that kind of thing. But would I change a note? Not in a million years, because that's where I was. And if I hadn't gotten there, I wouldn't have gotten to the next record and wouldn't have gotten to the next record, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason I was able to progress, learn, and adapt, you guys, is because I had early on learning through thinking and considering already, not everything, and I'm still doing it, but I had a sense of myself enough to say, okay, I'm going to write what I am right now. And the next album, I wrote what I was then, and so on and so forth. And I'm writing again. And so I'm assuming this is going to be the next incarnation of me at where I am right now. I could either write the hit, try to write the hit, or I could write from me. I could write something that I was proud of. I could write something that made sense to me that I wanted to listen to at the time. The outcomes from both of those options are the following. If I intend to write the hit and the hit becomes a hit, there's going to be success associated with that. Financial. Got it? And attention and fame and all those kinds of things. I look at that and thank goodness that did not happen to me, because that is an empty kind of, it's an external achievement. It's not because I didn't create something that I'm proud of. I created something formulaic for me. It wouldn't have given me ultimate pleasure. It wouldn't have given me happiness. There'd be pleasure there for sure, but not happiness in terms of the way that I'm experiencing happiness in my life now. Worst case is I write that hit and it doesn't become a hit. Now I've got no fame, no money, no pleasure even, and the emptiness of having not put something in the world that I'm even proud of. That's horrible. And I remember at the time thinking, that's a worst case scenario that I don't even want a part of. Then I've wasted my time and creative pursuit. The other option is that I write songs that were me. And when I write those songs that I can be proud of and I listen to, and most of the songs since when I started the actual quartet, I can listen to those and I don't cringe. I'm proud of that work. Either those songs could have been successful, in which case I would have been fulfilled because first of all and foremost, I wrote the songs from me and then made a living at it. That would have been great. Or worst case in that regard, unsuccessful, but I'm still fulfilled. No money in the bank, but I'm happy. Why? Because I can look back and say, I did it my way. That's the thing I did. Okay? In either way, the reason why I bring this up is because as we progress as human beings in whatever field you are, there are two options for you too. One is to try to craft yourself in a way that you think what success is or what fame is or what monetary, whatever security or what you think that looks like, to try to be that thing, or to figure out who you are and to be like that thing. You can be successful technically in the world the way that the modern world looks at success via money most of the time. You can be successful in both of those avenues. You can be successful by trying to be the guy or girl who is successful in what that looks like, or being yourself and learning about yourself. You can be successful in both those ways. But there's only one of those ways that's going to make you successful and fulfilled. And really, when you talk about what I think of success, it's all about the fulfillment. It's removing the external influences. It's removing the external definitions. It's all the, when it comes to exercise, I've talked about, you know, hit the 20 minutes of target heart rate. All these kinds of things are external to us, and we are bombarded with those things. And those things, if we let them, will shape our definitions of happiness. When I think ultimately we know better, we know better. But again, we're caught up because we're busy, because we're raising families, because we're going to work, because we're, you know, stressed out and we're tired and we're exhausted and we sit in traffic and all these kinds of things. And so we lose sight. And so all that we have is coming home and flipping on the television and we've got a picture of a freaking Kardashian and somehow that's a success for us. And we go, wow, I don't have that. And if I don't have that, I must not be happy, except that I totally am happy if I could just take 2 seconds to realize it, right? And if I could take 2 seconds to realize it, sometimes literally 2 seconds, I could realize that there are things I could do to make myself even happier right now that have nothing to do with what that picture looks like. That's just a picture of ridiculousness. You can be entertained by it. That's excellent. But if it's making you feel inadequate, you're just frankly missing the point. Because that stuff's just crafted. It's crafted. It's fake. It's as unreal as me trying to write a hit song and then failing at that or succeeding. I kind of failed either way, in my opinion, because it's ungrounded. It's ungrounded. But I understood back then as a musician, worldly failure, financial failure. It's like I understand this kind of like the difference between those two. Worldly failures, like the bigger picture of failure, would have been just me not connecting to my music in that way. Now, I understood it then, and I wrote to my way of writing, and it was brutal in many ways. I mean, it was brutal because there was struggle around just trying to work as a musician. There was struggle every time we got the chance to some break that we thought was going to be a huge break, and it wasn't a break, and but I always had the go-to. I always had the fallback of the music. I always had the fallback of the music. And here's more important. I always had the fallback of my wife and my child and my friends and my social network and my, you know, my the things that I enjoyed in life. I had a more rounded experience that I would never trade for all the gold records in the world. Ever, ever, ever. Now, honestly, would I have loved to have had a gold record? Even in that context, yeah, of course. I was putting a ton of time and effort into this pursuit that I loved at the time. I loved playing and loved touring. And if I could have done that more, I guess I probably would have done it. I don't know. Hard to say. It's not what happened. Okay? It's not what happened. But there was struggle. And I really want to be clear that when I titled this episode Stumble, it's because there is so much stumbling that occurs when you get in touch with who you are and how you want to live your life. You stumble. You fail in terms of the very narrow definitions of fail. Yes, you fail. But it's like, I was thinking about it, like the way that life is when you're growing and you're learning about yourself, it's never a straight line, like diagonally from bottom left to upright. Like it's never like, boom, I'm just growing and adapting and kicking ass. The overall arc is, or not to say arc, the overall direction is upwards, but along the way, there's just falls and peaks and valleys and peaks and valleys, but overall it's kind of growing, but it's up and down. It's up and down. That's what that is. That's what life is. That's what life is. But if you understand that, and you have the context and you have the, I'll just say the foundation of you, and you have the foundation of who you are and the life you want to live, you stumble, but you don't stop. You stumble, but you don't stop because it's really not failure. I'm not a failure because I'm not hugely financially successful, in my opinion. I'm a success because the parts of my life that matter to me are working. That makes me a success. It's not the kind of success that's going to put me on the cover of People magazine, thank goodness. Because if I'm ever on the cover of People magazine, it's going to be for something else, like that I killed a lion that's very near and dear to people's hearts. That's probably why I will be on People Magazine. I don't hunt lions in Christmas. It would just be like I just made a mistake. You know, like I threw my pen in the air and it just like landed on a lion. Like that would be the thing. And I would just be like, oh my God. And, you know, just be in trouble. Okay. Back to business. Happiness in the modern world. Okay. Happiness in the modern world is often about only about what we compare it to in the modern world. It's this weird, I was thinking about it, like we have so, well, I'll put it this way, we have too much knowledge. We have too much knowledge about other people's lives. We have too much knowledge about what so-called happy is in the natural world without media and TV and our ability to connect with people all over the world and millions of people via the social media and all these kinds of things. We have too much knowledge about that, but what's weird about it is we don't actually see the truth because we're not experiencing it firsthand. We're experiencing the crafting of that. Lest you wonder, you know, how crafted People Magazine is or any magazine. It's fully, reality shows are crafted. I knew a guy once in Los Angeles who was like a producer, and I asked him once, I was like, really, because I didn't know. This is when reality TV was sort of burgeoning. It was the reason why I stopped acting, essentially, because I couldn't get any freaking work because reality TV was taking over the work. And so he said it's fully crafted. Like reality shows are not reality at all. That's no surprise to anybody now. But at the time, it was like reality shows was new. And I remember thinking, well, like how is it really? They just roll the cameras and that's that? He's like, oh, no. They interview people and they sort of nudge them, and they sometimes they'll say like, hey, they'll just like trigger, they trigger so they can get the right response. It's crafted, it's BS, it's crap. We know that. But what problem is when our guards are down, happiness is only really about what we compare it to. We don't actually see if somebody is actually happy. We see the facade of happiness because we're not experiencing those people firsthand. We see the face they put on in the world. And that's fine, but we care about that stuff. We use that information to feed our own actions, to determine and influence our own actions about our families and about our friends and about our work. We use the facades of social media. We use the facade of people's game face, what they come out into the world with on that moment that they tweet. But what about in between? When they're not getting along with their families and when they're not, and where they're super insecure and they're not, but when they come out in the world, they got it, they crafted, they got the 140 characters right on the money so you can see what they, you know, right there. We do that. We all do that. But how much of that stuff that you come in contact with is shaping your reality, is influencing how happy you think you are, not how happy you actually are. There's no objective measure to that. But how much of what you experience in the world crafts how happy you think you are? Because if you're like most people, your happiness will be in relative terms. Well, I'm not that happy as compared to so-and-so, who I have literally no idea if they're actually happy, but they look happy on that photoshopped photo of them on a yacht. And if I could be myself on that yacht, I'd be super happy too. Well, what did it take for them to get there? That's what I want to know. What did it take? Actually, I don't even want to know, because it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. And when you understand that, and when you take into account that the journey to true health and happiness is inherently a struggle, it means stumbling, it means getting up, it means stumbling again, it means getting up. I wish it weren't the case. But without that, we don't succeed. We, the human species, doesn't succeed. And I don't know of any other species that succeeds without making mistakes and stumbling. It's just part of what that is. And that's, again, would be completely fine and something we would adapt to if we didn't think that it could be otherwise. And we're sold that it can be otherwise. We're sold no stumbling. We're sold the quick fix. We're sold the easy journey. There's no easy journeys. But we don't care unless we have something to compare it to. If we don't have anything to compare it to, the journey is a journey. We just do our thing. We stumble, we get up, we keep going, we do that, and we adapt to that way of life. But when we're constantly bombarded by the comparison of at least the perception that there's a way to do this without stumbling, that's rough going for us. That puts us in a really weird position. That we look at that and we say, well, that person's got a straight line of, you know, they're just progressing nicely. Their bank accounts are growing and their hit records are coming. And I don't understand why I have to struggle and have to have problems. The picture of them with their kids looks fantastic. I don't understand what the problem is. Why can't I have that perfectly? I'm in a tangent here for a second. This popped into my brain just now. This is so great. This years ago, like we were, this is before we had kids, guaranteed, because this is what we did. We had just gotten married and I love my in-laws and my folks. Like, it's great. We weren't getting like overt pressure about kids, but there was sort of like this, like, when are you gonna, not like it was just subtle, but it was there. When are you gonna have kids kind of thing? So it was kind of coming. We'd been married a couple of years. And so we got married and we didn't have kids for like 9 years. Like, did all that stuff. So when we had kids, we were so super ready to have kids. But until that time, we were kind of doing our thing. And I'm sure that our families were like, so are they going to have kids or they're not going to? So 1 year for our Christmas card, we decided to put a Christmas card out, which we did not, definitely don't do every year. But for 1 year, we had this idea that we actually executed, which was freaking paradise, which was we got one of those like regular sort of Kodak-y kind of at the Rite Aid Christmas card, like the photo card. And it was Lisa and I, and we had this friend of my sister's who lived in Orange County, like very, very like conservative, just like white bread kind of stuff. And I said, can I come down and take a shot with your kids? And so we drove down and I wore like a V-neck, like literally like a green V-neck. And Lisa had this like very, and we had these two blonde head kids who looked so not like us. I can't even tell you. And I was holding, the son, quote unquote, was holding a football. Like, we staged this whole thing and the little girl had super cute kids with her. And so we took a family photo with kids that were not our kids. And it said, happy holiday. It had like I chose the graphic of like two mittens and like a gingerbread cookie. Like, it was like that. And it said, happy holidays from Sid Garza Hillman and family. Like, just like no mention of Lisa, like just perfect. And it was so, oh God, it was, we got the greatest response. I don't even know why I talked about that. It's what it is. But anyway, it was the sort of this like picture. That's what happened. I really don't even know why I got on that tangent that popped in my brain. However, maybe it's the crafting of success and what that looks like to us. But it is very difficult. I'll back to the subject here. It's very difficult to live on our own terms. It is, we are sold this way of living. We are sold, like I said, a stumble-free existence. We're sold that. That looks a lot easier than the alternative, which is getting to know ourselves, living on our own terms. For me as a musician back then, creating on my own terms seemed to be a much more difficult path, but in looking back, it was the path that made me the happiest, for sure, and has continued to make me happy because the memories created by that way of doing it still feed me. They still nourish me. Those memories, I don't look back and go, oh man. I go, good that I did that, and proud that I did that, and happy to have done that, and now moving past that. You know, like, I'm not living back there going, oh gosh, I wish I could go back and do it again, or I really wish I could. It's like, no, that was a great time in my life, and I'm so glad that I did that, and now I'm glad that I'm not doing that, and I've gotten into what I'm doing now, which is super, you know, this job, this podcast, these videos, working with clients all over the country, like, this so fulfilling in this unbelievable way. And I don't have to be on the road, you know, touring around for, you know, 6 weeks without my family, right? I don't look back and go, gosh, I wish I could do that. And, you know, I never got to do it. I did it. Very cool. Very cool. How hard it is to live on our own terms. And there is, I look at all of us and the emails I get from people and I think, how little help there is in the world for us to do that thing. How little help there is for us to live on our own terms. There's plenty books. plenty of books, and there's colleges and there's universities to teach you how to write a song. There are music majors who learn the theory and learn the, but there is very little about help to help us get in touch with ourselves, to help us know who we are so that we can live on our own terms and understand via that process that there are struggles inherent. There is stumbling inherent in this. And nobody says to us, this is going to make you the happiest. Our inclination, of course, is to not stumble. Our inclination is to not have stress. But again, we would be okay with stumbling. We would be okay with failure if we just understood that that's all there is. But we think there's something else because of the fakeness of those things out there. And we're drawn by that. Of course we are, because who wouldn't want to do it easier? Who wouldn't want to lose 10 pounds in 21 days? Why would anybody want to lose 1 pound a month or 2 pounds a month? Why would anybody choose that? But you shouldn't have to choose that. That's what it is. That's what it is based on our design and based on our ability, if you're going to do it in a healthy way, that's what it is. If you don't compare it to anything, you're not bothered by it. You accept it and you go on with your life and live your life fully because you go, yeah, that's what that is. That's what that, a happy marriage is, struggle and stumble and learning and growing and adapting, because that's what that is. If you look at a magazine and see a couple sitting on a freaking park bench with smiles on their face and you think, well, that's what's happy, then you might miss out on the fact that the struggle and the stumble and the arguments and the growing and the learning about each other is part of the bag. It's part of the freaking bag. What I realized in thinking about this episode and the stumble is with my children. And what I realized for me as a parent, and this is going to be, it is telling you, it has nothing to do with whether you have a kid or not. This is relevant to this podcast in every way, shape, and form. What I really want for my children, and I think Lisa and I are really on the same boat, and partly why I, again, happy in my family. What I really want for my children is for them to be happy. I know that that sounds trite, but I think that a lot of parents, or at least ones that I've come in contact with growing up, et cetera, especially friends of mine, contemporaries of mine, whose parents sort of had this effect on them, the parents sort of wanted them to be a thing, not to be happy, but to be a thing. And remember in this podcast, how much I talk about how I don't know what makes you happy, but I want to help you be happy. I don't care if you like to be happy doing whatever. I'm not going to put those words in your mouth, but I want you to be enabled and powerful, or to see the power you have so that you can be happy doing XYZ. I want you to be healthy enough so you can be happy doing XYZ. I want to set my children up to be able to make their own choices about what makes them happy. But I want to teach them the ability to try the things so that eventually, this is another version of the word stumble, so eventually they stumble upon the thing that works for them. And that I can instill in them, hopefully, an adaptability such that when the thing they may stumble on that makes them happy stops making them happy, they have the freedom to change that thing and the power and the strength to change that thing. And the other thing I realized about my children is that if I can teach my children how to think, that would trump, no pun intended, geez, can't use that word anymore. Teach my children, if I can teach them how to think, that's more important to me than literally any trade or skill I could ever imagine. Because we have this move, at least in the United States, of like upping, it's all about science and math. Well, science and math. What that is, and I'm not poo-pooing science and math, it's great. But again, we miss the bigger picture often. And when we talk about science and math and computer skills and all these technical things, we are thinking about competitive and we're thinking about money. And that's where our brains are. That does not make people happy. It does not make people happy. Wealth equals happiness is the ethic of the modern world, but we're not a happy, healthy species in general. We're a very violent, very destructive species in general. If I can teach my child how to think, then I can set them up for what I hope I can set you up for. And this doesn't have to be children, because as adults, we may have been foisted. We may not have been able to afford school, or for whatever reasons in our lives, we never got the chance to go to school. We never got that time to, which I look back and just feel eternally grateful that I worked all through college, but my parents definitely helped me and couldn't have done it without them. I'm eternally grateful for that experience. And I certainly disagree with anybody who goes, you don't need to go to college. You can learn whatever you want in the world. Well, it depends on what you're talking about. Because you can certainly learn trades, and you can learn how to use computers at a job, and you can learn all these amazing things. But learning how to think means paying attention. And it becomes much harder when you get into the modern world, and especially when you have kids and are super busy. It becomes very, very difficult to think, to have the time to think. Enter My Small Steps. Because if you never went to school, it makes no difference, because via My Small Steps approach, you can infuse that in your life. It's afforded to everybody. But people who don't have the chance to, take time to go to school and take time to have that time to contemplate and think, you get in the modern world and you raise a family and you're struggling financially, which is just harder and harder to make a living these days for a whole host of reasons. The idea of like, I could take this time for myself is just gargantuan. It's too much. And we don't have the time, and we certainly don't have the energy, because we're freaking exhausted all the time. But you small step it and you do. You small step it and you take those moments. And they're moments. In the beginning, they are moments. They're not chunks of time. They're not chunks of time. And when you do take those moments, and when you learn to take those moments, you understand very quickly where stumbling belongs. That you stumble with your children, and you stumble with your spouses and your partners, and you stumble with your friends, and you stumble in the workplace, but you have moments of perspective, and you have moments where you back right out of that, you look at the big picture, and you step right back in. You stumble, you screw up, you succeed, you stumble again, you step back out, you have a moment of perspective, and you walk right back in. That's the stuff of life. That is, to me, it's like the only way that we can achieve any level of success. And I mean freaking success. I don't mean money. I mean success. Money can be part of that, but it's not the thing. The stuff of life is the experience of life. It's the full experience of life. It's the having enough time to recognize that you enjoy being with your kids, having enough time to recognize that you just spent time with your spouse or your partner that you're not even in generally going to think about because you're too busy, and you miss out on this amazing memory or an amazing experience, and then the memory that's associated with it because you're too busy, because you didn't steal the moment, because you haven't trained your body and mind to appreciate those moments. But you are training your body and mind, because you're listening to this podcast and you're taking these moments and you're taking a deep breath. And when you do, you notice more things when you do that. You notice more things when you do that. And you're okay with a stumble. Yeah, it was a stumble. And now I'm back in. I'm staying in the game. Remember my Stay in the Game episode from many, many a moon ago? There was a reason I started this subject. I said I revisit failure. Because in this podcast, because I think it's the modern world definition of failure that holds us back. The modern world definition of failure is that, a stumble is failure. A stumble is not failure. It's part of life. It's part of life. But again, in comparison, it's a failure. But in and of itself, isolated from all that crap, it's growth. It's adaptability. It's learning. It's achieving. You can't succeed without the stumble. You can't do it. Not in the way of success. Not in the way of any kind of measured, real of the stuff of life success. You can't do it without learning. And when you learn, there's stumbling inherent in any kind of learning and growth. It's what it is. It's what we're extremely, and the irony is human beings are extremely good at it. We're so good at adapting, but we don't trust that adaptation. We don't. We don't believe we can adapt. More on that probably next week. For now, the more you get in touch with yourself, like I say all the time, the more you'll understand that if you are clear in the big picture of you, if you are clear in the life that you want to live, then the stumbles that you have, the mistakes you make, and the failures, so-called failures that you have are just part of a big picture, and they're never the thing. They're never the thing. They're just, okay, that happened. How can I get back in? How can I get back in? Remember what I said before. It's happiness in the modern world is often only about what we compare it to in the modern world. And when we do this, we lose. When we take happiness and compare it to ourselves and how we feel and the experience of life that we want, we might realize that we're way more successful than we ever thought we were. Stumbles and all. Are you guys? All right. I'm going to leave that there for this week. So this coming week, you're going to live your life and there's a chance you're going to make a mistake and you're going to stumble. And I want you to look at it for a second. Me, not me it. That wasn't me. Get back in the game. Get clear when you say it wasn't me. Take another quick second and clarify what is you. Okay, that wasn't me. What is me would have been this thing. I would have done that thing. Good to know. You're back in the game. You're back in the game right away. And you put your brain to your life. You added your mind in the equation of your life. You're not mindless. You're full of mind. You've got this ability to assess your life all of a sudden. No matter how busy you are, there ain't nothing better than that, you guys. That is the thing. That's the thing. That's the thing. Not trying to remove stumbling, not trying to remove mistakes. How to infuse more thought, how to infuse more perspective. That's the thing. That's what my small steps approach gives you. That's what it delivers you if you just try it on for size. All right? All right, you guys. You're doing great. I mean, I'm getting emails. I got an email from the freaking Middle East. Is that the coolest thing ever? Not the High East, not the Low East, the Middle East. That one just right in the middle there. I got a nice email from a guy and I'm in a woman. I'm not even sure. I got to remember that. Anyway, you're getting an email back and I really appreciate you writing. It was amazing. On that note, if you want to email me, podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. I will be back next week with the Approaching the Natural podcast. I'm going to Colorado with my dad. If you haven't seen the video, go back and watch that video, why we take care of ourselves. My dad and I are going to Colorado to see a football game. I'm not even a huge football fan, but it's not about that. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to hanging out with him again. All right. You guys are awesome. Until I return next week with the Approaching the Natural podcast, be well.
Underground, yeah. Counting days just for fun. Adding up the time till it was done. And I'm walking back and forth to forget where I've begun. And I'm circling wise and see which is more fun. Yes, I'm circling wise and foolish to see which is more fun. Handing over, I'm giving all of it. Through asking what is true, and I'm taking all the memory, leaving them with you. I'll be coming back for them when all the black is blue. I'll be coming back for them when all the black is blue. The sandstorms will cover everything from wasted adios to torture ass. I bring it. I feel lost without you, but I will. I'm gonna find a way. But I will. I'm gonna find a way. But I will. I'm gonna find a way. Days when all that was, it is again. I need a plan, I need a friend that I don't mind stepping sideways. I just like to know when I can't put trust in you. Can't do that again. No, I can't put trust in you. Can't do that again. The sandstorms will cover everything from wasted adios to torture ass. I'm bringing. Without you, but I will. I'm gonna find a way. But I will. I'm gonna find a way. The sandstorms will cover everything from wasted adios to torture ass. I bring it. I bring it on. I feel lost without you, but I will. I'm gonna find a way. But I will. Gonna find a way, but I will. I'm gonna find a way. Underground and counting days just for fun. Adding up the time till it was done. And I'm walking back and forth to forget where I've begun.